We're back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Here in the Kintech studio, this hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Let's bring in our next guest. He joins us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. It is Brandon Astle, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play. Brandon, how many more Artur Shilov's stops are you going to have to announce this coming summer?
Well, June 2nd now? Playing some hockey in June is pretty cool. And yeah. Archer's is a massive reason why. I'm starting to kind of run out of questions to ask Manny Malhotra. Like, I interview him before most games, and I didn't even bring up Shilov's today. Like, you will not hear Manny talk about Shilov's because there's nothing more that needs to be said. I kind of feel bad keep asking Manny different ways to describe what he's seeing from Shilov. Like, in game four, I might just say, do you know what his favorite color is? Like, let's just switch it up. I don't know, because what he's doing is, like, you don't really have words for. But, again, I came on these airways last week. We shouldn't be surprised. Like, his nickname should be Mr. May, because he's done it at the Worlds. He's done it with the Vancouver Canucks in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and now he's done it at the American Hockey League level. So now we're in June. We'll see if he can keep it going. Obviously, he's got a great body of work that proves that he can. And, if the playoff MVP was handed out today, he'd probably be getting that award right now.
Well, he has been tremendous. And, you know, it's funny seeing him and Cole Lind go head-to-head, both guys drafted by the Vancouver Canucks, you know, a few years apart. But, you know, is that confidence and swagger really coming out and with his attitude as well?
Honestly, Sat, not really, because he's a pretty calm guy. Like, the way I describe him is, like, after he comes off the ice after a game, you don't know if you let him five or had a shutout. It's just steady the entire time. So that's the thing about Shilov. It's just how he approaches the game. I know, bringing up Manny Malhotra again, like, I asked him, like, what is he like off the ice? Like, what do you admire the most about him? He said just the way he's a professional and wants to keep getting better. And you see it every day. Like, he's out there when the Zamboni's still going around, trying to get some stretches in. He's usually the first one on, like I mentioned, and putting in a lot of work with Justin Poggi. And, his demeanor, like, you wouldn't know if he's in a preseason game right now or in the Western Conference Finals. It's just the way he goes about his business. He's not going to change. And I think that's a perfect attitude to have for a goaltender.
And there's no way Cole Lind tries to mess with him again.
I mean, I think he got the message, Dan. that was interesting. And, like, when you think of Cole Lind, you think of, like, a skilled forward that's put up a lot of points in the AHL. But, like, he's got over 100 pims in the AHL. Nearly got that again this year with Texas. So he is someone that likes to mix it up. And I was speaking to Jet Wu before the game because they played together in Utica. And he said he wasn't surprised that Cole did that. He kind of knows how he approaches the game. He's obviously a good player and was looking to get in the head of Artur Shilov in the Canucks. But I don't know if he can do such a thing when Shilov is in the cage, because he just does not get rattled.
Has the player, I know that, you know, we talk so much about Shilov's and a lot of the attention goes to him, but as far as the job the group is doing defensively, like, what stands out to you more, the individual guys on the back end or how the team has been defending as a unit under Manny Malhotra?
Yeah, that's a great point, Sat. It's definitely a team unit, and, like, if you ask Artur Shilov about it all, he'll give credit to his teammates. Obviously, the defense has a lot to do with it. They're blocking a ton of shots, but the forwards are as well. Like, Ty Mueller, a rookie on the team, blocks a ton of shots. Anytime he can get in front of a puck, he's doing it. And, like, he sees, obviously, some veterans like Sammy Blais, Phil DiGiuseppe, those type of guys that have been there, done that, and laying their body on the line. It just bleeds throughout the entire lineup. And this is a team that has been committing to defend all season long. Like, what we're seeing right now is nothing new. This has been happening on a more consistent basis, I would say, in early March, just before they went on that winning streak. And that says a lot, because they missed a ton of players at that time. Most of them were in Vancouver. But it just didn't matter. They weren't going to, I guess, necessarily light the scoreboard up on fire each and every night with the talent they're missing. So they thought, you know what, let's beat teams by defending. Let's frustrate them. And that's exactly what they've done for the last 3 months. And obviously it's taken to another level here in the deep playoff run that they're on. But you'll ask anyone in that locker room, they will say every guy has bought in, and that's a huge reason as to why they are where they're at right now.
Well, this whole like run through this entire playoff, like they've done such a good job of shutting down the other team's top line, like throughout every matchup, every series. And hey, that's always going to be a key to winning any playoff series. But even again, like what Texas had the top three scorers coming into the series in the AHL playoffs, and they've been mostly quiet here through these first two games.
Yeah, and you know what? I went on Drant and Jamie's show the other day and broke down some numbers. Like, what they're doing right now to the top dogs of the Texas Stars is nothing usual. And, like, when I found out that it's going to be Texas Abbotsford going into the Western Conference Finals and saw, like, the top three scores from the Texas Stars, that didn't really worry me, to be completely honest with you, because they just shut down the opposing team's best players. Like, going back to the first round, Dan, the Tucson Roadrunners is who they play in the best of three. Their top three scorers in the regular season had just 3 points in three games. They move on to the next round against Coachella Valley. Their top three scorers combined for just 4 points in four games. And in the last five-game series they had against Colorado, the Eagles scored the most goals in the entire league in the regular season. They got a lot of firepower, and their top three scorers had 6 points combined in five games. And two of their top goal scorers, like Jacob McDonald, he scored 31 goals in the regular season. He got squat in that last series. So they just do a remarkable job, and then at the end of the day, it's nothing that they're not reinventing the wheel. They are just battling. They're getting in the way of the pucks. They're winning 50-50s. Like, doing that in your own zone, whether it's in the corners, in front of the net, it goes a long way to keeping the puck out. So they just have committed to that, and obviously, like, talented players are going to find a way to get on the score sheet. Obviously, the Texas Stars forwards have probably had a couple of sleepless nights, like their go-to guys, and will look to be hoping to get on the score sheet in front of the home crowd. So if it happens, it happens. But through two games, they have not been a factor at all.
Well, you know what's, you know, we were talking about Linus Karlsson a bit earlier, and you mentioned he had some ups and downs in the playoffs, but his consistency and his production just seems to be there. Is he getting better as the playoffs are going on?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that brings his work ethic every game. We saw it at the NHL level, obviously, the last month of the season. And he has come down, and he hasn't pouted. He's wanted to get better. Sorry, the pressing the goal horn. But maybe, hopefully we don't hear that the rest of the night. But Karlsson, again, is someone who has a lot of respect in that locker room. He's the all-time leading point scorer, goal scorer in Abbotsford Canucks history. And he hasn't, like, rested on his laurels. Like, he's not satisfied. Obviously, he wants to get to the next level and stay there. And hopefully he's done enough, not just this year, but in the previous years, to show that he can be an NHL player. And I've said it time and time again, he's got that transferable game to the NHL, because his type is obviously getting in front of the net, in the corners, winning battles. Like, you look at, like, his height and weight, doesn't seem like he's the biggest guy, not even 180 pounds. Maybe he's less than that now, because in playoffs, you lose a lot of weight. But we are in Texas, so we may put a couple LBs back on. But he's so strong on his stick. And you guys saw that, too. I know a lot of media folks, when they watched Karlsson, especially late in the year in Vancouver, were impressed with how hard he is on pucks, how hard he is to move in front of the net, and his nose for the net. Like, this is a guy that gets a lot of redirection goals, rebounds. Like, those are Linus Karlsson goals. He had an overtime winner in Colorado in Game 3, and it was just greasy, but it was just the way he would draw it up. So, and he's lighting it up right now. Like, he's all of a sudden, he's third in playoff scoring. He leads the Abbotsford Canucks in points. It took him a little bit to finally get rewarded, but now you can see that he's really playing with a lot of confidence right now.
Yeah, and you know, the hero on Saturday night was Akito Hirose, who, you know, burst onto the scene with the Vancouver Canucks a couple of years ago, Brandon, and you know, he's still played pretty well here in these playoffs now for Abbotsford, but kind of a forgotten name amongst fans of the team, because, you know, he just had such a strong start to his Canucks career, and his development has kind of slowed down a little bit, but he came up in a big spot on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and a testament to him, Dan, because a lot of other guys might have just sulked and pouted when they weren't getting a lineup. Like, he didn't play a ton during the regular season, but one thing he did do was being ready for when his name was called. And when he got into the lineup, I would say in mid-February, it's been tough for Coach Malhotra to take him out because he's been playing so well, and he's not the biggest guy out there, but the way he thinks the game and the way he can move, obviously, is his best assets out there. And just can't say enough about his work ethic. He'll battle, whether it's in the corners, in front of the net. He can play in any situation if you want. And just a guy that I'm sure he was wondering what his future was going to hold when he was having some issues getting into the lineup. So that's what I just look back and just give him a couple of pats on the back for just kind of sticking with it, because I'm sure there were some dark times during this year wondering what's going on. But at the end of the day, he can only control what he's going to control, and that's working hard in practice. And credit Manny Malhotra for giving him an opportunity and letting him run with it.
Well, yeah, and it's a testament to their defense as well, the depth they have and how it hasn't been easy for all these guys to get in. And they have a couple of veterans as well on that back end and guys who played in the AHL now a couple of years. So it's not an easy blue line to crack to play these minutes in. But one player we were hoping to see more of, but, injury robbed him yet again after only playing a period. He threw a hit and left the game. Atu Ratu, it's unfortunate. He left the last game, didn't play more than a single period, but do we have any sense on what his status might be, that we might see him here in this series again?
I do not. I'm hoping to get one soon. Obviously, someone that missed a bunch of time. His last game before Game 2 was in the second round in Coachella Valley in Game 2. And I know he worked so hard to get back. And then, unfortunately, I went to go make a hit and something didn't feel right. So he left that game and did not come back and have not gotten any injury updates. But I'm hoping to get one from the team soon and maybe chat about it on the air if I do get the word or not. But, you just feel bad for him, Zach, because you see the strides he's taken this year in Abbotsford and Vancouver and really looked good with the big club and had some confidence. And you think he'd come back down for the Calder Cup playoffs and take his game to another level, which he was probably primed for. But, unfortunately, the injury bug has gotten him, and I really hope it's not long-term, because – if you can add a guy like his stature in your lineup when you're already playing this well, it'll bode very, very well for the team's future in these playoffs.
And Texas getting a little bit of reinforcements as well. Alex Petrovic, who was playing with the big club Dallas in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, they get eliminated by Edmonton, and he's dropped back down. He's a veteran guy, had 25 points in 58 regular season games in the A this year. He's going to add some more defense on the back end, but also, he's got some offensive pop at the AHL level. So this is something Abbotsford's going to have to deal with. And I wonder from your perspective, they've scored only 4 goals in the 2 games. They are up 2-0. But where is more offense going to come from should they need it moving forward in this series?
Yeah, you look at the goal scorers in this series for Abbotsford. 3 of the 4 are Guillaume Brisebois, Akito Horose, and Christian Willannon. And Willannon and Horose, those are their first goals of the playoffs, so that's the depth stepping up. And you look at who can maybe keep it going here in Texas. It could be anyone, honestly. It could be the third line of Blais, Smith, Kara. It could be the newly formed top line of Baines, Mueller, and Carlson. Those three have been in the best line so far in this series and had a really good game number one and played solid as well on Saturday night. It could be someone like Max Sasson. He always seems to create something with that speed of his. So that's the beauty about the Abbotsford Canucks, Dan. 18 different players have scored at least one goal in these playoffs. And last I checked, you can only dress 18. So Archie Baines and Atu Ratu are the only two regulars that haven't scored a goal. So obviously Ratu's had the injuries, and Baines has had some chances, and he's been so good these last 3 games. He's second in playoffs in assists. Goal scoring obviously isn't something that he relies on. Sure, would he like to get one? Maybe tonight's the night. He's on the first line, power play and all that, so I think it's just a matter of time to keep playing like this. He'll hit the back of the net, but to just finish up there, maybe it's Jonathan Lekker-Mackey as well. Talk about someone who can change the game quickly with his shot and ability to navigate in the offensive zone. So I don't envy the Texas Stars trying to figure out how they're going to stop the Abbotsford Canucks right now, although it's not like both teams have lit it up. The goaltending has been the story, but I'll tell you what, boys, there has been a ton of chances. Game one should have been a 7-6 game, simple as that.
Yeah, it makes it for some real exciting hockey, especially for those in attendance in these barns with the intensity of playoff action. And, before we let you go, we have a question from one of our listeners, Andrew and Langley. Ask Brandon about Jet Wu and Chase Wooters both being a physical presence in the series.
Yeah, no question about it. Jet Wu, we'll hear from him on the broadcast in the first intermission. He had a very nice and clean open ice hit on his old teammate, Cole Lynn, and that's just another day in the office for him. That's what he does best, is provide that physical element and defensive play. He's going to make life difficult on the opposing forwards. And whenever you go up against a guy like Jet, it's going to be a long night for him. And I really like how he, at the end of game two, the buzzer sounded and then that whole melee happened. Sammy Blais went to skate over to the Texas Stars bench and Jet was like, oh boy, I better back him up. So those two were kind of on an island. And it was just Blais by himself for a second, but Jet Wu raced over there quickly to make sure that Sammy wasn't alone. So that's one thing I admire about Jet. Chase Waters, he's just going to bring it each and every night, all different facets, plays every single situation. He's the best face-off man in the league, in my opinion. He's one of the best penalty killers. Boys, you haven't even asked me about the penalty kill. It's 39 for 40 in these playoffs. 39 for 40.
Unbelievable.
So Chase is a huge reason for that. A great PK starts with a good face-off, man, winning the puck back to the D and firing it down the rink, and it seems like that's just second nature to them right now. So, and then Sammy Blais is just like, I don't know if they feed him raw meat before the games, but he is coming out each and every game looking for contact. He is just an absolute wrecking ball out there. So I can't mention physical hockey without mentioning Sammy Blais because he is just something special to watch. Like, he is on the prowl looking to inflict some pain legally, yeah. Hopefully. But, yeah, it's playoff time. It's just the best. You see all that kind of stuff.
I think Sammy might be trying to showcase his route back to the NHL for a team that wants a little bit of snarl for their next playoff run next year. Brandon, last thing before we let you go, I promise. It's a two-part question. Is everything actually indeed bigger in Texas, and have you been able to slam some barbecue yet?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that. I'm going to start this interview off by telling you a quick story. So 12 years ago was the last time I was in this rink to call a game. I don't have a great memory, I'll admit that, but I remember the pregame media meal was a thing of beauty, full buffet, Texas barbecue, and I will never forget that. So at game two in Abbotsford, I asked one of their staff members if they still have it, because I'll be there on Monday, and they said, it's taking it to another level.
Oh.
Don't eat before you come. Like, just get ready to take all the fixings in when it comes to the Texas barbecue. So I was telling our staff members, like, text me. We'll go down. We'll strap on a feed bag. We'll put on a clinic. Our stomachs will hate us in the second period, but this is just something you can't pass up. And I just poked my head in, Dan. It's Chinese tonight.
Oh.
So nothing wrong with Chinese. Obviously, yeah. I like it, but when you build yourself up that you're going to get this Texas barbecue and it's not there, it's a little disappointing. And the fact that there's a Shake Shack, like a Dan Riccio sandwich away from our hotel, like it is right there. So I pass that up for the Texas barbecue, but I'll happily go get some Chinese food right now.
Sounds like a blast. Brandon, always appreciate the time. Have a great call tonight.
Always a pleasure, boys. Have a good night.
There he is, the great Brandon Astle, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play. He will have the call, Abbotsford and Texas, coming up at 5 o'clock from Texas. And you'll hear the call here on Sportsnet 650. An impressive run, and, you know, I know... you know, so much of the discussion about the Canucks was like, oh, they played too boring. And you know, guess how the Abbotsford Canucks are having a lot of success playing in the playoffs so far here under Manny Malhotra. It's playing solid, structured, defensive hockey. Wow, what works in the playoffs, Sat? Solid, structured, defensive hockey. And Manny Malhotra has this group drilled as good as he can.
Yeah, he really has, right? And I think Manny, when you look at the job he's done, and you know a lot of Canucks fans wanted to see the Canucks hire him, and ultimately, you know, maybe one day we'll find out ultimately what happened in the process and you know, how much they truly considered him or not. But I know big picture, the best thing for Manny might be to just have this AHL run, go back and do one more year, and not rush into getting into an NHL job. And we'll see what happens here in the future for him. But, you know, it's becoming a really impressive resume already for a guy who's doing very well in his first stint with a team that has a lot of young players. It's not your typical, they have some veterans. We'll talk about Sammy Blais in a sec, but it's really about having, it's really about having a real young core and a lot of first-year players, and he's having success with them.
Which is not something you see a lot of, especially at the AHL level. Artur Shilov's has been unbelievable, and I know, you know, the way things work in today's day and age, everybody's like already thinking about training camp and like, oh, what are you going to do with Shilov's? He's going to get claimed off of waivers, and I would just say everybody pump the brakes and let Shilov's continue to have a ton of success right now during this run.
Yeah, exactly. And I think same thing here, have success. And I'm not sure this changes anything, you know, for the Canucks as far as their goalie picture in the NHL. And I'm not sure it changes too much when it comes to his valuation. The fact that he is waiver eligible this year, you know, it poses, and, you know, I'm not sure the Canucks are going to be doing everything, bending over backwards or protecting him. So, but I don't see the value being sky high anyway. So I don't think it changes things too much overall. But if he remains a part of the organization, it's nice to see him find his game again.
Yeah. You know, you'd still have to have a team that needs to take that leap to project Shelovs to somebody that they can trust with NHL games. And, you know, it's hard for goalies to prove that because, you know, when you're kind of in that tweener stage between the AHL and NHL, you only get so many opportunities, as we saw with Shelovs early this season with the Canucks before Rick Tocchet kind of lost trust there and really just started to run Lankinen as long as he could. But, you know, you only get so many opportunities. And if you're not good in those opportunities, you know, it's tough to earn that trust back. Coaches can lose trust in a goalie, and then they just it's so hard for it to return. And
it really is.
And that's the hard part.
And sometimes it's an organization as well, right? And, you know, they don't view the guy the same way. And it's unfortunate. I'm not saying that's happening with Artie. Like, who knows? Like, injuries might happen. Maybe the Canucks want to protect them. They carry three goalies. Like, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's really promising. I wanted to make a point about Sammy Blais. He has 67 penalty minutes in 14 games. 67. and I don't know what the hits are, but he's throwing an obscene amount. Like, it's like Kiefer Sherwood-esque amount, the amount of hits he throws every single game. And it's fascinating, right? Because you kind of wonder, what went wrong with Sammy Blais, a guy who should be an NHL player with the attributes he has? I think the biggest thing for him this year, and I know he had the knee injuries, but was getting into physical shape. And that's the thing for him, I think, for next year. I don't know who's giving him a one-way deal. I think he's going to have to come and fight, maybe even do a PTO and show. But I think the biggest thing he has to show to, whether it's a different organization or the Canucks, is him showing up to camp being in really good shape. Like, that's one thing that's held him back, and the reason why it's taken a while to make the impact he's needed to make this year.
Yeah, that was kind of what we saw in training camp in Penticton, and it unfortunately led to him not earning more than just the AHL contract than the one he had. But I think, you know, kind of like what I said with Brandon, is he's kind of trying to showcase right now what he could provide to an organization if he is to get another NHL opportunity. And that's just a pest probably playing fourth line minutes at the NHL level. Stan Riccio and Satyar Shah coming up. We've got Don Taylor, our regular Monday contributor here on Sportsnet 650, his take on the Abbotsford Canucks and what the Canucks might do as the rumor mill continues to pick up during silly season. It is Canucks Central on Sportsnet 650.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canucks Central, it's Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, save $3 on Vintage Ink Whiskey Barrel Aged Red and $5 off Empress 1908 Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and always enjoy responsibly. Let's bring in our next guest. He joins us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries, joining us regularly on Mondays. It is the great Don Taylor, one half of Donnie and Dolly, which you watch on Czech TV Monday through Friday from 10 to noon. Donnie, it's that time of year, man. It's just silly season. What's the latest on the rumor mill? And couldn't believe it when I heard Dolly bring up Jason Robertson today. That's an interesting name.
You got excited, yeah. Donnie, when that name came out.
I did. I made like a weird sound. It was quite primal, actually.
Oh, finally a name to get excited about.
There you go. Well, he was talking about Mason Marchment. And then for whatever reason he brought up, which nobody's heard, but Jason Robertson. So of course you're going to get excited. But
classic Dolly, right? Just like the biggest name, just casually being like, oh yeah, just, by the way, Jason Robertson, yeah. This other guy, he's also available.
Yeah, I think he mentioned Gretzky's coming out of retirement too, and thinking of joining the Canucks. But I think the more realistic one was the more realistic player who may or may not be available was Mason Marchment, which we talked about today, which, you know, and I said that's the type of player, like realistically, like, of course, you know, they'd love to get going to happen. But with Mason Marchment, mean, nasty, plays with an edge and, you know, probably quite affordable. And that was the player that Dolly was focusing on. And then he brought up Jason Robertson. I got a little bit excited. So I'm sure a lot of other people did as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly did. And I'm not sure how realistic that is, especially, I mean, before we get into, like, could they be trade partners and maybe you can look at a package, can you see Aquilini and Gilardi making a trade of that magnitude?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, of course. I mean, because it would be a now trade, and I could see them. And you know me, I'm more of a guy who thinks rebuild or future, and that's just not going to happen. So, of course, I could see that because that's just it seems the way they operate. But the way they operate. So, yeah, I could see that. I just don't know if I'd agree with it.
Yeah, it's you know, this whole summer. I mean, silly season is kind of what we've been joking about, and whether it's acquiring somebody or trading off somebody. You know, Elias Pettersson still finds his way on these trade boards. Donnie, do you feel it's realistic, or it's something that's just kind of in the back of our minds, given everything that's happened with Elias Pettersson?
I just can't see anybody taking on that contract, even if the Canucks absorb some of it. And it's not just about the contract; it's also about the player. And you know, even if it was contractually a pretty good deal, it would still be for another team. Would still be a lot of money. He's just such a mystery, such an enigma right now. I don't know if you could ever, you know, take that on. It would be a now trade for a somewhat contend. I would think for a contending team, and I just would be way too risky. So I just can't see it. Now, is it possible? Of course, I guess anything is when it comes to player movement. But I just can't see anybody taking on a player that costs that much. That's just so mysterious. So enigmatic, so puzzling. I just, and especially when you've got a player whose dedication to the game. Let's be honest here. Not keeping himself in shape, you know, or having off-season conditioning problems. That's an issue. I just can't see it. I just can't see it. And you know, he's in the Canucks' hands, and it's the key to next season. His improvement.
Well, you kind of mentioned that. I mean, whether the Canucks. Whether the Canucks get value or not, I don't think they're trading him unless they actually do get value. Like, you're right, maybe they have to retain, but I don't think the Canucks are in a position where they can just give the guy away and clear all the money. I think they want something of significance back in return. And to your point, I don't see it happening either. But, you know, you mentioned how you want to see a rebuild, and it's pretty clear, at least now it's not happening. Who knows what happens in a year, right, with Quinn Hughes in a status. But is there a player you would be okay with them trading a first-round pick for, or are you against it no matter what? Like, for instance, Nick Kiprios mentioned Martin Natchez being available. Maybe he doesn't want to stay in Colorado. Maybe it didn't work out for him. Like, he's, what, 26 years old? Like, is there a player you would be okay with them parting with future assets for?
Well, it would have to be, I guess, somebody like that. But I'm just going to stick by my guns. I've said all along that I think the best, what is best for this team in the wake of what was in a really impressive run last season. But I'm back to being a rebuild person. I do not want to see them trade that pick. I mean, they've already traded a first round pick in order to land Marcus Pettersson and Mancini. And that was pretty good return, but I'm a draft pick guy. I'm a rebuild guy. I'll stick with that. I do not want to see them trade. I mean, look, Sat, if they give some outrageous deal, you know, came up with a land of some superstar that includes that package. But I just don't see that happening. They're not that lucky through the years.
So you don't want to see them trade 15th overall for Pavel Zacha then?
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. I know he's big and he's a center and his numbers are okay, but that's just not, it would keep them fair to Midland. I just,
yeah.
You know, I don't want them to wallow in that sea of mediocrity anymore.
It just kind of highlights everything that we've kind of discussed. You know, there's options out there. There's not a lot exciting unless Jason Robertson is actually out there on the trade market, right? And it just doesn't. I don't know. There doesn't feel like there's a lot of realistic pathways for them to build a Stanley Cup contender this way. And that's ultimately what we keep landing on here, Donnie.
Yeah, and it's just, again, I know it's tough to take given what happened last year and how impressive it was. And I'm going to go off the subject a little bit here, guys. Did you hear Dreisaitl's clip yesterday after practice, Oilers practice? And he was talking about how the Oilers, one of the moments where they really grew, really important moments, was winning the Vancouver series, mm-hmm. and how they learned so much during that series because the Canucks really tested them. And they managed to come back from a 3-2 deficit and win at home and win a one-goal game in Game 7 and how much they grew from that. It was just a great moment. What if the Canucks had won that series?
Yeah.
Like, what would have happened to the Oilers? What would have happened to the Canucks? Would Miller and Pettersson have had their feud because they would have been on to the Western Final and Lord knows maybe they beat Dallas? I mean, it's just so stunningly quick. I just... You know, my head's spinning from it. I can't imagine what, what Dollywood's head's like right now. But it's just so quick. But you have to accept your fate at this moment. And I just don't think you can look back and say we were so close because the pieces just aren't there like they were even at this time last year.
Well, it's just really incredible how different histories can be based on one or two games, literally one game, right? The entire course of a franchise's history can change significantly, and that's just the way sports work. But to that point, I really wonder, you know, in the future how we're going to look back at how this entire JT trade unfolded and whether there was a different way to handle it. Like, the organization, Rutherford has said this, you know, he's been asked numerous times that there's nothing they could have done differently, they felt like. But looking back in history, like being a goal away from maybe going to the conference final, knocking up Edmonton, to trading JT, it just seems like such a strange 180 out of nowhere, you know. And not that it was out of nowhere, because, you know, it was percolating behind the scenes, the whole JT Pettersson thing, but it's still mind-numbing thinking about it.
It really is. And it's, you know, it's right up there with, you know, as I go back in history, you know, losing the spin of the wheel and not getting Gilbert Perreault at 1970, the Lafayette goalpost, you know, Marcus Naslin and the broken leg, J.J. Daniel getting drafted, coming to the stage of the draft on his crutches. It's just these ridiculously weird moments that could only happen to the Canucks. And, you know, two players fighting, and you can't – like, I have yet to talk to anybody. Rick and I have yet to talk to anybody on our show when we ask them, have you ever been through this? We had Lyndon on last week. I know you guys have had him on as well.
Yeah.
Has this ever happened? And he goes – well, yeah, there's been a lot of fighting, and then usually you go have a beer or there's a brawl or something, and it's over. And this just could not. It just festered and got better and then festered again and reared its ugly head. Got it was just really, really strange. And it's strange to people who have been around the hockey world for a long, long time. They've never seen anything like this where they just could not get over it. And we're going to find out the details. And I'm just pretty sure it's going to be strange because it's the Canucks. It's going to be bizarre, but really frustrating for fans because it just seems like something that they should have been able to solve, either the two players, the organization, whatever the case may be. Because, you know, we all are at workplaces and people don't get along, and you have to forge ahead for your own good and for the good of the company. And usually things like that get resolved. And for whatever reason, even though these should be the happiest, these should be amongst the happiest people on earth, given their good fortune and, you know, gifts from God in terms of their natural ability, they should be able to look at themselves in the mirror and say, let's get over this. Let's move ahead. It's for the best. And they just couldn't. And it's just really, really, really strange and frustrating.
This is, you know, there was an earlier part of Pettersson's career where he went into a big slump as well, and it was just around his second contract when he signed that. And like, second time makes it, I wouldn't say a pattern, but, you know, it's happened more than once. It's not a one-off. It's not a complete anomaly with this player. So I wonder, like, even if he does return to form to a certain level next year, Donnie, are we always just going to be in the back of our head like, well, when's the next slump coming?
Yes, definitely. And that's a great point. I always remember when Bruce Boudreau first took over the team, Pettersson was going through a slump, and there's a great piece of video with sound where Bruce is mic'd up, and he goes over and has a really nice, heartwarming talk with Elias Pettersson. Hey, you're going to get out of this. I still believe in you. And he did. And then he got out of it. He had a real successful season from an individual point of view with Bruce Boudreau, and then he dipped back again. And I remember that really well, that because what he's going through now, like you just said, it's not the first time. And is this going to be the roller coaster ride that Canuck fans go on with Elias Pettersson? I don't know. I would take the roller coaster over the direction he seems to be going in right now, which is straight downhill.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Like, let's just stick on that for a moment, because it was very clear that Tocchet wasn't going to be the guy that's going to put an arm around Pettersson. Like, I don't think Tocchet, like, I think you've seen Tocchet in person. Like, we've spoken to him. You guys have interviewed him. Like, he's not a intimidating guy in person. He's pretty chill. Like, I've seen how he interacts with players, too. Like, he's calm and all that. But Adam Foote's a bit different. Like, he's really like a nice, chummy type of guy. You see how he is with the players. And what you mentioned about Pettersson and Boudreau, you know, putting an arm around his shoulder, telling him that he believes in him, I do think there are people in the organization that understand the best way to get through to Pettersson, whether you like it or not. And Donnie, you coach kids. You know how kids are. And we can sit here and say, you know, you should be tougher, but if you don't learn how to deal with them, like, that's just the way the future goes. There are guys you have to put an arm around, and there are certain guys that you just have to approach differently. Like, I know it's a pain in the ass sometimes, but it just is what it is.
Yeah, and Boudreau and Tocchet seem quite different. Adam Foote just comes across as, not that Tocchet doesn't, but comes across as Adam comes across as the nicest guy in the world. And you would have to think that, you know, behind the scenes, the Canucks have seen something where they believe, you could, because it's so important that for Pettersson to get out of this, that Foote is somebody, the right type of personality to get him, you know, on top of Adam Foote being a knowledgeable hockey person, but to be the right coach for Elias Pettersson. They have to be thinking that, just because it is so crucial, all the money they've spent on this guy and the time they've invested, that they have to be thinking this with Adam Foote. And maybe he's more Boudreau than he is Tocchet. And in this case, that's a good thing.
Don Taylor, our guest. So the Stanley Cup Final rematch starts on Wednesday. And, you know, we have this conversation all the time, especially when a Canadian team is involved. But, like, are we there yet with Edmonton? Can you cheer for the Edmonton Oilers here, Donnie? I'm kind of at the point where I do want to see Connor McDavid reach the ultimate glory.
Dan, that's exactly where I am. Is I do not want to see the Oilers win another Stanley Cup. I've seen it 5 times. I'm good. And, you know, and you got to remember, I'm old. So I, and as I often remind you guys, I remember when Edmonton was winning every CFL championship along with you know, the Stanley Cups they racked up in the 80s and early 90s. So I'm good. I'm done with it. I just do not want to see Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I don't want to see them end their careers without Stanley Cups. I think that would be a real shame. And I have all the respect in the world for Marcel Dion, you know, or a NFL player like Dan Marino. And I just hate that there could be an asterisk besides their career resume that they didn't win the big one. And listen, again, Dan Marino, Marcel Dion, I know there are others, but you always bring that up. You know, who's the greatest player never to win the Stanley Cup? I mean, Marcel Dion's name always comes up. Joe Thornton, same sort of thing. I don't want that for Connor McDavid, because I'll tell you what, is there anybody out there, and this is nothing against any of the players of the past who haven't won Stanley Cup, but is there anybody out there who hasn't been supremely entertained by Connor McDavid? Yeah. I mean, he has put on such a great show for all of us, especially, you know, for those of us in Canada. You could say that for Draisaitl too, although I realize he's German. But I don't want to see him end his career without a Stanley Cup. And if it's let's just say this. Let's give him one in Edmonton and see where it goes from there. But I do want to see him win a Stanley Cup.
I think they will win a cup at some point. And honestly, Donnie, if they win it this year, it might be the start of at least a mini dynasty. Because you know what it's like for guys like that? They get over the hump once,
yes,
and the cap is going up as well. Maybe a tough year or whatever. But if they win a cup when McDavid's 28, 29, I don't know. I think that's the start of a few before they're done.
Well, on the other hand, what if Florida wins? And like, what? Yeah. How do we look at that team if they go to the Stanley Cup three times in a row, three years in a row, and win two of them? And you look at their situation. I know they've got a couple of UFAs, obviously Bennett and Ekblad, but other than that, it's pretty good. A lot of their key players are locked up for multiple years. We'll see what happens with Marchand, but the word dynasty could be used around them. But you're right. You get over that hump with a great player like McDavid, and you find out how it's done. Maybe it happens in multiple years for them.
It's to bring it back onto the Canucks. We were talking to Yannick Hansen on Friday, and he was like, "We asked him, how do you build the Canucks to get over the hump and get past McDavid and Draisaitl? You get younger," is what he said. So
there you go.
Another vote for the rebuild. You know, like, get younger and be good when they're when they're into their mid 30s. That's when you need to be good.
Yeah, you need more ninth rounders like Yannick. Well, he's one of the great stories in Canuck history. I mean, to be drafted that low and to be that effective and to be to this day just so respected in this market is a great, great story. Along with Burrows, who wasn't drafted at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best stories is undrafting. The Canucks have a couple of those, right? Like, it's the Burrows one, the Chris Tanev one. There are a couple of massively impressive ones.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Before we let you go, I did want to ask you about Alex Barkov. He wins another Selke Trophy this season, and we were just talking about, like, if you don't have a Connor McDavid or even Nathan MacKinnon, is the next best thing having that two-way stout centerman like Patrice Bergeron, Kopitar type, and that's exactly what Barkov is becoming.
Yeah. Well, what all those Kopitar, Barkov, what do they all have in common? Patrice Bergeron, they're not flashy. They just win, and they have Stanley Cup rings. It's pretty impressive. And again, I don't know if they're filling buildings or keeping people on the edge of their seats, but there's nobody in hockey you respect people who play that type of game more than actual hockey players and coaches themselves. It's pretty impressive.
Donnie, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Guys, and anytime at all, and we look forward to Jason Robertson joining the press.
yes, we do. Thanks for this, Donnie.
Thanks, guys. Lots of fun.
There he is, the great Don Taylor. And people not happy with the idea of McDavid winning a title, and certainly Edmonton winning a title. Loud Titans fan. Reach, you're from Toronto. If a real Canuck fan would never cheer for the Oilers. Another one says from Rafe, but Edmonton isn't a Canadian team now. They're separating, aren't they? that's from Rafe. It's a great text. Others saying, Donnie, how can you cheer for Edmonton? What's wrong with you? Kind of thing. It's more about a McDavid thing. Like, all the generational players in the history of the league have essentially won a cup. You go through time, and maybe Lindros is the only one, if you want to put him in that sort of category. He was certainly in that category before the concussions really derailed what was set to be an unbelievable career for Eric Lindros. But Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Sidney Crosby, now Connor McDavid, they've all, McDavid is the one, the next one that just hasn't gotten over the hump and lifted Lord Stanley's mug yet.
Yeah, I think the greatest player to never win a cup is probably Marcel Dion, right?
Yeah, top five scorer of all time.
Yeah, that's probably the best player to never win the Stanley Cup. The Sedins, of course, are Hall of Famers. I'm not sure I put them in that category, though, right?
Yeah, different sort of stratosphere.
Yeah, Luongo, you can say, is one of the greatest goalies of all time. He did not win a Stanley Cup, but again, like, I don't know if you put him in that McDavid class, right? Like, Dion is probably the only guy.
Yeah. Luongo is a good shout, given he's probably one of the greatest goalies of all time. Maybe a bit of a different class for goalies, but McDavid is just I don't know. Maybe it's silly to think this way. I know our texters don't care who McDavid plays for. They care who McDavid plays for more so, right? They don't want to see Edmonton win. So no matter who it is or what, they'll cheer for Connor McDavid when he's playing for Team Canada at the Olympics or at the Four Nations, but not if he is with the Oilers. And I completely understand it from a fan's perspective. You know, on Saturday, I definitely was happy to see Inter Milan get their asses handed to them in the Champions League final. So I totally get it from that perspective. But part of me, especially now as I continue to get older and we've covered hockey for a long time, I'd consider myself more of a neutral fan of the game in general. And I kind of want to see the greatest players in the game get their chance at glory. And I want to see that for Connor McDavid.
Yeah, by the way, what was up with the 5-0 finals and the big matches?
I don't know. I didn't expect to see the Whitecaps take a page out of Inter Milan's book yesterday. That's
what
do
you say
certain.
About Inter? You never what?
you never want to go full Inter. That's right. That's what you don't want to do. And the Whitecaps, well, they went full Inter yesterday with their performance. It was maybe even worse, man. Like that was just dreadful. And you know, just to stay on a local topic here for a moment, I got into it with a couple of people on Twitter, Chris and some others, just about, you know, how many times a Vancouver team has come close to glory and just completely fell flat in the big game, right? Or in the big moment. And we've seen it with the Canucks and a couple of times in franchise history, obviously. And the Whitecaps have done it as well, you know, barring Canadian championships, which just don't hold the same sort of feel for fans. But this was legitimately a big game, a big moment for the Whitecaps. Could have been a historic moment for Canadian football in general, being the first team to win this trophy. Only one other MLS team has won it in the last 20-ish years. So it was a big deal, and they were a complete no-show. The run was unbelievable, but it kind of felt like, you know, an underdog run where you finally got outed in the final, right? And that's harsh because the Whitecaps were so good during the run and have been so good in MLS this year. But if we're being honest, it's kind of like one of those long winning streaks that towards the end of it, you're starting to see the wheels fall off. And then the wheels completely fell off yesterday, just in the biggest moment on the biggest stage. And that's tough for the Whitecaps because they've done a lot of good this year. I just hope it's not a precursor to this season going sideways because they've got a tough schedule ahead of them and still a lot of injuries and a lot of absences. But it was definitely tough to watch last night.
Yeah, I mean, if they finish the MLS season strong, I'm not even sure they have to win the MLS Cup, but I think if they can go deep, you know, finish near the top of the standings, have a strong season, I think you feel good about the campaign still. To your point, if it goes sideways from this point on, then, you know, it's like you peaked already and you peaked way too soon, kind of, and I hope that's not the case. But they have a lot of talent. They are, you know, a team that has been really playing, like, essentially been playing without any pressure. I think yesterday was the first time they had real pressure too, though, right? Like, it was, no one expected them to be there. Now it's like, no, you're playing for the championship.
Yeah.
And I think you'll grow from that, hopefully. Like, that's the hope, that you grow from that experience.
Look,
right?
They were dealt a pretty tough hand. I don't want to make excuses for them because, hey, you still no-showed in the final and were by far the second best team. You know, they humiliated you a little bit and you humiliated yourselves a little bit with some of the turnovers that they had. It was an ugly game, but they had a really heavy schedule. They still didn't have Ryan Gaul during this whole run. Now, there was a lot of reasons to why the climactic moment was as it was last night. You still hope that professionals would overcome it, but, you know, they didn't get their midweek game postponed in MLS. So it's, and you have to fly to Mexico City. Meanwhile, this team is preparing for 14 days for this one match. I mean, you're just, the cards were completely stacked against you in so many ways that it was unlikely for the Whitecaps to be able to put out a good showing in this match. But at the same time, you never want to see it end that way, especially in a final.
Especially with the amount of self-inflicted mistakes, too, right? It wasn't just like they were running all over you. It was like you made a lot of errors.
Yeah, a lot of self-inflicted errors. And that's something that people are never going to be able to forget. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. All right, coming up, final segment of the program. We'll get into a couple more things as we continue here on Canuck Central.